Happy International Women's Day. You know I wouldn't let the day pass by without sending. I think I haven't made a podcast in over a year. My last podcast was from last year, International Women's Day. So I'm back and I'm extremely thankful and grateful that you're still listening, even though I've taken such a long break. I would have loved to say I apologize for it, but I'm not apologizing for it because currently I have other obligations that require that I give a lot of my time. And when I do this podcast, it requires a lot of research, writing, reading over. And it's, for me, it's almost another full-time job. And so I don't want to half-ass it. So that's essentially why I looked back and I wanted to pivot into other things as well. So when I thought about it and strategically looking at it, I didn't think it was advisable to just keep on pushing myself because it was expected that I would continue. So I decided that, you know what, at this time, just put it on the back burner, concentrate on the things that are essentially critical that you do because you have an obligation to, and then do this because you love to do it. So that's why I took a break. But on International Women's Day, certainly, I couldn't let the day pass without me dropping by to say hi to my listeners, to the new ones. Hello to the old ones. I love you as always. I love the new ones also. Thank you for listening, for sharing, for actually encouraging me. I've had one of my listeners buy a book and a pen for me because she said, I want to hear you, you know, do more. And I said to her, thank you so much. That means a lot to me and I will certainly be back. But for now, let's wait. But today, I've been thinking the whole morning. In fact, from yesterday, I've been thinking about what it means to inspire inclusion. And I thought of it from a whole different, like all sorts of angles. And I asked myself questions because I feel that to unlearn and relearn, you need to be introspective as well. You need to ask yourself questions and see whether you're also at fault and not just advocating for certain things to happen, you know? So when we say that we're inspiring inclusion for women, as women, I'll start with us. How are you raising your kids at home? How are you raising your girl child to inspire inclusivity in her, herself, as well as the people that she chooses for as friends and even the choices that she makes? How are you inspiring inclusivity in inspiring your male children to be empathetic and sympathize with issues that are predominantly female? Do they understand what periods are? Do they understand what a girl staining her clothes means? Do they understand, you know, a girl having menstrual cramps means? Do they understand even the processes of adults going through menopause and the changes that it comes with, how severe it can get and all of that? Because I feel that once they live with it and they understand it and they sympathize and empathize, as they grow older, it becomes ingrained in a fabric of the essence of who they are as a being. And I believe that as mothers, we can begin by nurturing in that sense. So for me, inspiring inclusivity means nurturing children, nieces, nephews, neighbors, kids, anybody that we are in touch with, that Sunday school teachers, that, you know, will ensure that they understand what it means to be a woman, they empathize, and they are willing to make it easy for women to feel included. I also thought about what it means for us to be included when it comes to policy. So I've seen a lot of advocacy for, you know, taxes to be taking off parts, which I feel are extremely expensive because it's an essential tool for girls. It's just like food, you know, how we're so
bent on talking about making food cheap so that everybody can afford to eat it. I feel like parts should also be equally that cheap so that everybody can afford it, to reduce infections and, you know, people staining their clothes and all of that. So I'm glad that that conversation is being had. I'm also glad about the parental leave that is now inclusive of men, because the father going off to work and leaving just the mother to deal with the baby, I feel like it's part of the reason why a lot of women go into postnatal depression. But imagine that, having help, feeling overly tired, one can take a break, one can sleep, and you both nurturing a life that you both brought into the world, you know, the seed of that child and the woman carrying it and birthing it. I feel that the man shouldn't just go home and bring them to the hospital and leave. So I'm excited about that. I feel that even though it's asking for men to come and join their wives for parental leave, I feel that it's something that generally will benefit women in terms of inclusivity. So yeah, that's one of the angles I took it from. Also, when it comes to single parent homes, a lot of the time people say, oh, women can't raise children and yada yada yada, and women, children from single parent homes don't do well and all of that. And it amuses me, because what about the widow? Is it just for divorced women or separated women? You know, sometimes the conversation and the language that is used when people take a stand when it comes to leaving relationships that don't augur well for them and their well-being is that, oh, your children will suffer. And it makes no sense to me, because they're already suffering within a two-parent household. So the language, oh, she's separated, don't talk to her, don't do this. They, you know, people, a friend of mine went through it in the church, and I read a story online in Nigeria also where because of the separation, they treated her for filth, you know. But in the end, she raised amazing kids and they're doing well. And then people tend to ask you, how do you do it? It takes the grace of God and a parent who's loving, who's caring, who's willing and understand the tools. It doesn't take a two-parent household. A two-parent household ensures that there's unity and there's an example of a good home for the kids. But a one-parent household is equally good. So I feel like conversations around these things in terms of inclusivity should generally, because why should somebody from be disqualified from being an elder or deacon because they are separated or divorced? It makes no sense to me. But the widow can be in the church and be a leader. So let's have those conversations. Policy at work. How does a mother who's widowed, who's a single parent, right, through no fault of hers, maybe raped, maybe lost the father of the baby before the baby even came, and she's raising this kid who has to go to school, who has picked up from school, but the mother has to do a full-time job which closes at 5, but then there are no opportunities for part-time in these parts of the world. And so oftentimes you will find that a woman will stay at home because they don't have a choice. And so I feel that we should have a conversation where mothers who are able to say that I'm the primary carer for my child, even when perhaps they live with their husband, but the husband also has a full-time job, but as the mother, it is required of them to pick up the kids. Bosses, well, COVID has shown us that we can do this by giving them time off to work from home or close at a certain time to be able to pick their kids. There also, in terms of policy, how do we ensure that our transportation systems are running effectively so that these parents can actually close at the time that they are supposed to close and know that within 15 to 20 to 30 minutes, they will be where they are supposed to be to pick up their kids, barring any kind of trouble on the road. In these parts, you can't tell whether a car is going to cause the traffic. Like, it's just ridiculous because someone has decided that they don't want to be in the parking bay by the road, but they've taken one lane, two lanes, three lanes, and they've turned into a car park. And we see it all the time, and nobody says anything about it. Nothing about it. I mean, are we building a society where people can do as they please by just taking their stuff to go and put it in places where they are not supposed to? Because if I voted for someone to take on this kind of responsibility, because if I could actually go in there and move them, I would. And so our leaders need to look at that in terms of making life wholesome and giving us peace of mind. Peace of mind is, you can't buy it, but are certain things that give peace of mind on the road, knowing that somebody will obey the traffic sign, knowing that somebody will not cut you into your lane because they can, because there are no consequences for us, especially for us female drivers. They always think that they can do anything that they want. And so most of the time people say, oh, female drivers are difficult, but that's not the case. We've had too many times where we're not included in the conversation even though we're on the road, because somebody is cutting us off because they think we're female. We don't have the sebe akukudru or the courage to be on the road. You get what I mean? And so I feel like we have to have these conversations, right? And that's why I feel like in nurturing our children, when we're considerate of women and ourselves, and they see it, when they see a female on the road, they will be considerate. You get what I mean? So yeah, these are the kind of conversations we should have. So we should be nurturing in terms of the language. Inclusivity also means language that we use, how we're nurturing our kids, the policy framework in place that's supporting us, embracing women and their biological changes that come with it. Because most of the time, women are afraid to either look for a new job or take on a new job opportunity because they've just recently been married, and the job opportunity requires don't get pregnant within 2 years. And so then they don't take the job, or they get pregnant and they are scared because they might not get an opportunity that they worked so hard for, because they might have to go on maternity leave. I feel it's really unfair because it's a biological situation that we can't do anything about it. So if we're saying that we're inspiring inclusivity, then we should not be afraid to employ pregnant women. We should not be afraid to promote pregnant women. We should not be afraid to encourage pregnant women to go for career changes that are coming, because we see it all the time. Oh, you go on maternity leave, so give the opportunities to someone else. Even in our school's educational system, for mixed schools, until a few years ago, it was always the head boy and an assistant head girl, just by default of the fact that your female leadership is taking out of your hands and giving to a man. But perhaps you could do it better. Just like us, we haven't even had a female president yet. That's a conversation for another day. And I can count the number of female presidents in the world. I even think that we would do better when we take the leadership race, because obviously God is a woman. We'll have the argument for another day. But well, I think that we have to have a lot of conversations when we say we're inspiring inclusion, how we're nurturing, the language that we use towards women, the policy framework that's in place to help women live wholesome lives, the ideas that we place in terms of the changes that we make and the decisions that we make. They are subtle. They might be subtle, but they send a message out there. So while we create opportunities for women, it doesn't have to always be at the top. It can start from the bottom, from the homes, from the schools, from the churches, from the small, within our communities. That is where it grows and becomes part of our natural fabrics. Little drops of water make a mighty ocean. I believe that building the country starts from the communities. So the little communities, the big communities, and the overall big community of the country will benefit from the good that comes from down there. So decentralization is something that I will take on any day. I just feel like we have the tools, but we're not using them well. And so while I don't want to digress, I say that nurturing, policy, education, creating opportunities, ensuring that women have a place is important when we say that we are inspiring inclusion. Until I come your way again, this is really off the top of my head. It's just things that, you know, I've been thinking about in terms of inspiring inclusion when it comes to women. And so even for us women, how do we mentor? How do we push the people that we work with? People say female bosses are difficult. Are they difficult, or they expect that you do the right thing? So yeah, that's a conversation that we'll have for another day. Toodles. Thank you for all those who are listening and for sharing the podcast. I love you guys so much. I will see you again when I can, but definitely next year by this time. I will be preparing towards coming back. In the meantime, oh, my very good friend Irene also has a podcast out. It's called Unapologetic. It should come out very soon. I urge you to look out for it and to listen to it. It promises to be amazing. Happy International Women's Day. And I urge you to think how you can inspire inclusion at the home, at the church, at the mosque, at your workplace, amongst your friends, amongst your community, and every subgroup that you find yourself in. It doesn't have to take policy alone. It takes nurturing, language, policy, creating the enabling environment, creating opportunities, pushing women, the girl child, all of us as one, to ensure that we inspire inclusion in women. And enjoy the rest of your evening. Love you as always, and thank you for sticking with me.